getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. A busy 3 hours as we will get you set for tonight's Game 5 between the Chicago Blackhawks and the Tampa Bay Lightning. The series tied 2 games apiece. We'll be joined in about 15 minutes by Chris Dingman, Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst, to preview the game. Lots going on in the world of hockey. We will get you set for the upcoming NHL draft 2 weeks from today. We will, of course, be in Sunrise, Florida for the draft. Ezzy and Dave Minuk of IllegalCurve.com will be there. I guess the draft. Round 1 on Friday, rounds 2 through 7 on Saturday. We'll be joined today by Grant Sonye, the general manager of the QMJHL's Charlottetown Islanders, to talk about the draft prospects from the QMJHL. Also be joined by Craig Button, TSN's draft insider, and Brendan Savage from MLive.com to discuss the Detroit Red Wings hiring of Jeff Blashill as their new head coach. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, good morning to you both. I just got to say, before we get into game five and the preview and the series and everything else, that yesterday, last night in Winnipeg, was one of the great nights of all time with the soccer game.
Of all time.
It was a great night in Winnipeg. I mean, leaving the stadium last night after, the soccer game was, the energy in that crowd, the energy in the city was palpable with the soccer game and the concert at MTS Center and Jazz Festival. It was one of those, great Winnipeg days, and I just thought I'd want to mention that off the top of the show because I felt that strongly about it.
Well, that's awesome, and good morning, Drew, and good morning, Richie. I haven't gone to any games, Drew, but it has been awesome to see so many tourists around town. And, this is the biggest sporting event we've had here since the 99 Pan Am Games, right? So it's been unbelievable to see the support that this tournament has been given. And there was no reason to expect that we wouldn't support this tournament because we've always supported sporting events in this city. So I agree with you. And there's a lot going on in the city. And it's almost, difficult to watch hockey with the nice weather. And everything that's going on, the soccer and everything like that, hitting the golf course. But, there's still a few games left in the finals. So
yeah, by Wednesday night at the latest, we will know who is the 2014-15 Stanley Cup champion, the Blackhawks and the Lightning, 2 games apiece at this point in time. Now, this series hasn't captivated me. I'll say that right off the start. I haven't found it to be a dynamic series. All the games have been very close, obviously, one-goal games. And the play on the ice has been, I think it's been good. I don't think it's been outstanding. I don't think the intensity has matched recent Stanley Cup finals. I'm not 100% sure why that is necessarily. But this series hasn't captivated me, but you're into a best of 3 at this point in time. I mean, it's probably going to ramp up, you would figure, over the next 2 or 3 games.
I mean, Dre, I think the quality of play is very good. I think you're looking at a speed game, and I think the game's at its best and it's played at a high skill level. I think I expected more open play.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think they're using their speed. I don't know if it was Eric DeHatch, somebody mentioned it, kind of in the way Canada did in the Olympics, like using your speed to kind of play with the puck and make sure the other team doesn't get a chance, but you're not exchanging chances. You're not displaying skill as much as you can. I think a factor of the fact that this series isn't captivating you is that it's Tampa Bay. So James Murrow wrote that he thought it was like the closest final. Maybe it's close in terms of chances, but I don't think the storylines are there.
Yeah,
I just don't think there's a storyline. I think the quality of play on the ice is very good, but Vancouver Boston, for example, was skill and pucks against brawn and the physicality of the Boston Bruins and trying to push around the Sedins like that. There was a storyline there, right? I mean, you have the storylines of Chicago against Philadelphia, you know, a few years back, Chicago's first cup. I mean, those teams on paper are better than these teams, in my opinion. So I think the quality of play was better. So I don't think it's the best cup final by any means, but I think the quality of play is high. I wish there were a little bit more disdain between the two teams, mm-hmm. but they've never played, so that's it's hard to manufacture that.
I disagree with you guys completely. I think the finals have been really exciting, and I'm not going to disagree with Richie in the sense that there aren't big storylines. I mean, if you're looking for the big storylines or storyline, it's probably the Ben Bishop. You know, is he possible to play tonight? Andre Vasilevsky obviously coming in Game 3, getting the win, and then playing pretty well in Game 4. But to me, there's that storyline. Steven Stamkos going for his first Stanley Cup. The Chicago Blackhawks trying to win their third Stanley Cup in 6 years. To me, those if you want the storylines, that's probably the storyline. As Richie said, it's not maybe as sexy to the non-hardcore hockey fan. But to me, it's about going for the Stanley Cup. That's what it's about. It's two teams trying to win the Stanley Cup. When we talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning getting swept in the first round last year, and you know, with all the injuries they have right now, I mean, Tyler Johnson's injured, guys. He's mm-hmm. not taking faceoffs. Yesterday he came out and said he's not injured, but he's injured. Andre Palat's taking all the faceoffs. But to me, the quality of hockey, as you mentioned, it's close. Yeah. And I know Game 1 wasn't the best game, but you know, Chicago, you know, their win in Game 4, it was very impressive. He had three posts, and the score was really not indicative of how well they played. They only got two shots in the first period. The mm-hmm. first period was one of the worst periods I've seen them play in a really long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But the quality of hockey, Richie, is very high, and you have, you know, two teams that are very skilled, as you mentioned. They're very fast, and you know, it's tough to find a big difference between the two, because with Vasilevsky in net, they already were at a disadvantage, in my opinion. Corey Crawford's done it, and Corey Crawford had a pretty underrated regular season, in my opinion. So, you know, the major storylines might not be there, but, you know, after Game 5, you know, a lot is going to change, because now the series is only really starting.
Sure, well, then let's talk about Game 5. Obviously, we're into a best-of-three situation. What's going to be the determining factor or factors about which team is going to end up winning the Cup come either Monday night or Wednesday night?
I think it's a great benefit, first of all, Chicago to have the extra day off. That's a big difference, especially with the Oduya injury, and I know he played a lot. But, I mean, getting him a little bit of rest, getting these guys the extra day is going to be important because of how hard they're riding their horses on the back end there. And now with three games left, that extra day, I think they're going to be fine. You know, obviously the attention is being pointed to Patrick Kane. I get this thing about Patrick Kane and Taves before last game, before he scored. You think I'm worried about Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves? I mean, they've done it so many times before. If they were to have one bad playoffs, okay, and one bad series, I get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like some of the other guys who bust out annually, right? It's not like the Joe Thorntons and stuff like that. Like, that's not really a storyline. Four games, you know, can Kane create more? Sure. And is that speed and the Tampa Bay Lightning speed factor in terms of getting in his way? Yeah, for sure. But I just think that stuff is a little bit overblown.
Two days off between games, you need to fill storylines somehow.
Yeah, but I think in general, really, a lot of the stuff gets overblown. In terms of Tampa, I think Vasilevsky is a good netminder. So I don't think that the drop-off from Bishop to him is maybe as big as some other people do think. And so I think those are a few of the main storylines. To me, it's a toss-up, though, in terms of the way this goes. Like, I don't think these games are so evenly played that you wonder. I would say this: you wonder if Chicago has another gear for a couple of their guys.
Sure,
and that's what I would. Now, granted, no, Johnson hasn't, as you mentioned, the injury. Johnson hasn't performed. Obviously, the injury is a factor.
Stamkos has what, one assist in the entire
he's playing a little bit more now. We'll talk about that later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for both sides, I mean, you have one on one side, you have the same thing on the other side.
It sort of goes to the narrative of the entire season in the NHL is how there hasn't been one sort of dominant team, how any team sort of could beat another team on any given night. And really, we're seeing that in this series, especially, where these are two, you know, very good teams. That are evenly matched.
That plays into storylines, right?
Yeah. that are, you know, they're two very good teams that are evenly matched, and now we're into a best of three. I mean, I think a lot of us, myself included, even more so than you guys, because I had the Blackhawks winning in five, so I underestimated the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I'll take the full mea culpa for doing so. We're at the point, I mean, you guys can still get your, you guys had Chicago in six, both of you, so you can, that can still come to fruition, but, you know, we're into a best of three. We're that close here.
Yeah, but even in a season that really hasn't had a dominant team, to me, that's even more reason why it's impressive what Chicago's doing. In an era of parity, Chicago can possibly win third Stanley Cup in 6 years. To me, like that's the storyline. This is the best team, I think, of the last decade. So 6 years, 7 years, whatever.
Sure.
Not quite a full decade, but, you know, let's call it a decade. And, you know, Jonathan Toews, arguably the greatest captain in the game. Duncan Keith, you know, one of the best defensemen in the game. And then you have, you know, Hossa, to me, I think he's a Hall of Famer.
For sure, Hall of Famer.
I think a lot of these guys, by the time Jonathan Toews' career and Patrick Kane's career are over, they're probably going to be Hall of Famers. I think you'd say Toews is already a Hall of Famer at 27.
Well, there's probably four Hall of Famers that you'd expect to come off this Blackhawks team. Toews, Kane, Hossa, and Keith.
Yeah, and depending how Ben Seabrook plays.
And Seabrook is on the bubble, probably. So, I mean, you got four Hall of Famers there. I mean, the expectation, of course, would be that at least Steven Stamkos, you know,
and Hedman,
if
he's played incredibly well.
Yeah.
He's taken over the series at times and logged big minutes and made really nice passes, of course, and is able to contribute at both ends of the ice. And it's funny, when I was at the draft in Montreal when he was picked up, I walked by Victor Hedman at the hotel, and really slender at that time, but tall. And you could just see, it was like that body was made to fill out and be that big defenseman. You could see it that day.
Mm-hmm.
Vander Kane was like that too. You walked by him, you said, that guy's going to fill up and be a big, strong guy. And they both have. Hedman has really progressed in terms of processing the game, I think, and his decision-making. And by that, I mean understanding how long he is, how tall he is, how much space he can take away. Sometimes you'd say, you know, he skates well. I think he skates well. So, you know, Kelly Rudy had mentioned he doesn't know if he skates that well. I think he skates pretty well for a big guy. But the thing is, it's kind of like Chara, who doesn't skate particularly well. When you're that big and that smart, you don't really need to be the best skater because so long as you're in the way.
Tyler Myers here, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, different because
Hedman's
able to take over the game defensively.
Of course.
And he's been incredible as.
Yeah, you're completely right. And a couple of years ago, you know, some critics were talking about, not me, but of course, but some people were talking about Victor Hedman being a bust. And last year he had, what was it, 65, 70 points. Last year was his breakout year, and this year he continued it. And Richie's 100% right. I mean, Hedman and Anton Strahlman, that top pairing has been amazing. They've beat some pretty good teams along the way, the Rangers and the Red Wings. And so, I mean, you got to give Hedman credit. And as we know, defensemen take a little while to develop. And, you know, he's been a great pick for them. And, you know, this Tampa Bay Lightning team, I know, you know, Steven Stamkos hasn't, I actually think he's played pretty well. He hasn't got the points. But, you know, he's not taking faceoffs. And I think there's something going on there beyond what we're seeing on the ice. Because to me...
Which we'll talk about later on in the show, in fact.
If you want, and let's call it an X factor, Drew, to me, if Stamkos gets going here and with two games left in Tampa Bay, to me, that could be the difference. Because at the end of the day, I still think he's the best player on either of the two teams. I think that's been lost a bit. Like, I think Toews maybe is a better all-around forward, but... I mean, Steven Stamkos is the best goal scorer in the NHL aside from Ovechkin, right?
Yeah.
So he's the second best goal scorer in the NHL. I mean, he has the ability to take
over. And some years
he's
better than Ovechkin in goal scoring.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that could be the difference if they've been able to shut him down. Really, the only series where Stamkos was probably, you could say, dominant was against the Rangers. So
yeah, that was the only really. I mean, that was the only series that he was the Steven Stamkos that you expect. You know, the 60 goal guy when we saw him here get that 60th goal. You know, however many years ago that was. Mm-hmm. But just you're right. He's got one. If he ends up the series, you know, if Tampa falls short and he doesn't end up getting on the scoreboard, there's definitely going to be some people pointing their finger and saying Steven Stamkos didn't, you know, produce in the Stanley Cup final in his first chance at a Stanley Cup final, whether that's fair or not.
I mean, I don't think I don't think Stamkos's play is going to be criticized to that extent because he's produced. I mean, maybe not as much as you'd think, but it's not like he's gone completely cold.
Sure.
In this cap world, though, it's interesting to see, you know, a guy like Cedric Paquette. You need to have some contribution. We used to see it so much more in the late 90s, early 2000s of third, fourth lines being especially important. Remember the Dallas Stars, those big goals from Benoit Hogan, guys like that. you see it so rarely, especially, you know, you're relying so much on your top guys here because you can't spend much money on those bottom lines.
Right.
And so goals like Cedric Paquette's in game three are especially important. He's played well. So, I mean, that'll be interesting to see how it, over these next three games, if some of these less heralded players come up big.
Sure. Marcus Kuger getting the overtime goal in the Western Conference Finals, right? Yeah, lots of that.
I wouldn't be surprised if they go with 12 forwards and put Drouin back in. Well, that's just a hunch.
Well, the report in Toronto Sun says that Drouin and I forget who wrote that report, that Drouin and Cooper hardly talk, and that Cooper won't look into his eyes and hardly talks to him. And then Drouin came out and said, we have a great relationship. We talk all the time.
It's kind of like our relationship with Drew Ritchie.
That's true.
Drouin, we're almost the same person.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I just know, as I said to you guys a number of times on this show for the past probably year and a half, I think this goes higher than John Cooper. And I just don't think he fits particularly well in that organization right now.
Well, we're gonna talk about sort of the dynamics of the characters in and around the Tampa Bay Lightning a little bit later on in the show, because Steven Stamkos is an unrestricted free agent after next season.
Yeah, and in a world that doesn't really have many of these big ones anymore, like you look at the crop this year and you just close the computer, you close it right away. are we on live on July 1? But in a world where none of these guys become available, Steven Stamkos, it appears, is going to at least test the waters, and that should be very interesting.
We'll talk about it later on, but let's head to break. When we come back, Chris Dingman, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's 9:20 a.m. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Instagram, instagram.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Lots of Drew selfies on there.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst Chris Dingman. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. My pleasure.
Chris, obviously brought you on. Big Game 5 tonight in Tampa Bay between the Blackhawks and the Lightning. We're down to a best of three at this point in time to determine who's going to win the Stanley Cup. You know, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts been so far in the first four games of the series before we look forward to tonight's Game 5 and going onwards?
Well, I think it's been a pretty good series. I think it's been exciting. It's been up and back. There's been a lot of chances back and forth, and you know, I think you see two teams that have a lot of skill and have a lot of speed, and I think you're seeing that game in and game out, and it's just a matter of, I think, if Chicago's top four can continue to play the minutes they have and do the job against the Lightning's forwards, the triplets, Steven Stamkos, Alex Killorn, etc. I think it's been a great series. I think if you're the NHL, you're very happy with how it's gone. It's been pretty exciting, low scoring, tight checking. But it's been great. It's been a lot of fun to be a part of, a lot of fun to watch.
Chris, thinking back to, you know, the 2003-2004 run you guys went on with the Lightning, and if I recall correctly, it was Game 5 that Oleg Saprykin scores, I think, the overtime goal, and then you guys head back to Calgary and win that game in double overtime. Maybe take us into the mind of a hockey player going into Game 5. It's the same thing, the team's going into Game 5 in Tampa Bay. What were your thoughts before that game, and how is that similar to the team's thoughts now, you think?
Well, I think any time you're tied up and you have a chance to go ahead and then know you only need one more win to win a Stanley Cup, I think that's your focus. And, you know, I took it, and our team took it, just every game, just have a good start and prepare to have a good start, have a good first shift, whatever you got to do on that first shift, whether it's get a hit, get a shot, you know, make a play, whatever, just get off to a good start, especially when you're at home, get the crowd into it, do something that'll get the crowd energized. And, you know, that was our focus. And, you know, anytime you have the opportunity to go up in a series, that's what you want to do. We weren't able to do that back in 2004, but I guess it didn't matter because we were able to win Game 6 on the road and then come back for Game 7. So, I think this game's important, but I don't think it's a do or die because I think both these teams have shown they can win on the road. The Lightning, you know, had a dominant home record during the regular season. Excuse me, in the playoffs hasn't been as dominant, but they played some pretty good hockey on the road. So, you know, I think it's a game both teams want to win, but I don't think it's a must-win by any stretch.
Chris, when you look at the playoffs as a whole, the first four rounds and specifically the final right now against the Chicago Blackhawks, John Cooper has tended to at times use seven defensemen and not dress that 12th forward. And we've seen that with Nikita Nesterov and Jonathan Drouin coming out after playing in game one. Do you think that strategy is going to continue in the last three games here? And do you like that strategy that he's used?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think, the game Jonathan Drouin got in and played, I thought he played really well early in that game. He had a couple turnovers as the game went along, but I thought he provided that spark and it was pretty good. And, as far as the seven defensemen, I think there's some injuries on the back end that people maybe don't know about. And, Nesterov's a guy that I don't know if you want to play him too much 5-on-5, but he's really good on the power play and he can move the puck well and he's a good shot and he's really good at getting shots through and not getting them blocked. So I think you're sitting and seeing the tale of two teams where, obviously Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman get the majority of the minutes, but, Lightning like to spread their minutes around. I think on the other side with those Blackhawks, you see, they have no problem giving all the minutes to three or four guys for the most part. So, I like that strategy as far as seven, just because, like I said, that Nesterov, he's a good weapon to have on the power play. And, what that does, especially on the road, is that you can move guys around. You can move Stamkos, you can move Kalorn, you can move Kucherov. I think you're seeing, different guys with different lines, and you can maybe get them away from some of those top D pairings for the Hawks. So, I like it. If I was playing, I probably wouldn't like it because it would probably mean I was the guy that was out of the lineup. But I think when they've done it, their record's shown it's worked pretty well for John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Chris, you mentioned that you think there might be some injuries on the back end there, but we got to ask you about Tyler Johnson. I know that Tyler Johnson came out yesterday and said that he wasn't injured, but he's not taking faceoffs right now. Is there any doubt in your mind that he's battling through something?
Oh, I think he is. I think there's a lot of guys that are dealing with injuries, and that's part of the playoffs. It's part of it's such a grind, and he's still playing. He's a great young man. He works hard and has worked for everything he's gotten. And I think it just shows kind of the depth of this team, and that a guy like Andre Palat who can jump in and take faceoffs if need be and does all the little things. I think that's why that line that they call the triplets has been so successful this season. Have all the plus minuses they do is that the great plus minus is that. They all play good defense. Those guys, Plott and Johnson kill a lot of penalties together. And, I think there's something there. There's something that he's not feeling 100%. But, as we know, this is the playoffs and, you're not going to find out. I think we've seen with some of the other teams where you're seeing all the surgeries that are going on now. Now they're disclosing the injuries of what guys are playing with. But, I think, Tyler Johnson among a few other guys are dealing with some injuries.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Tampa Bay Lightning analyst Chris Dingman as we're getting you set for Game 5 tonight between the Lightning and the Blackhawks. Chris, obviously, Ben Bishop, we saw him leave Game 3. Vasilevsky comes in, gets the win. Vasilevsky starts Game 4, plays pretty well, takes the loss, but only gave up the two goals. Sounds like it might be Bishop back in the net tonight, but even, regardless of who's in net, do you think there's a big difference between Ben Bishop and the Lightning goalie as the Lightning goalie or Andre Vasilevsky?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a difference just because Ben Bishop has shown over the last couple seasons that he's become an elite goaltender and he can win hockey games for you. And, Vasilevsky's a young guy that has played some tough situations this year and a lot of back-to-back situations on the road when the team was tired and played well. And he's a great young talent, and for him to go in and do what he did, especially game three, he came in and he saw a couple shots right away and then had I believe it was a power play against him and made some big, big saves and just basically got thrown right into the fire. So, I think the Lightning have shown they're confident in both goaltenders, and I think last game the Lightning showed that the way they played, especially early in that game, they didn't want to give up a lot of opportunities because you got a young goaltender in there and you want to make sure you protect them. So, yeah, I think this team has depth. I think when they play their game, they're as good, if not better, than anybody in the NHL. It's just a matter of when they get out of their structure, as they like to call it, and get a little bit too fancy and start turning the pucks over. But, I think they're confident in both goaltenders. But, you've seen with the Chicago Blackhawks, they've used both their goaltenders, in these playoffs. So, obviously they like to have Ben Bishop in there. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he was playing tonight. But if he doesn't play, I think they'll be just fine with Vasilevsky.
Hey, Chris, you mentioned earlier in the interview, the concern with the amount of minutes that those Blackhawks top defenders are playing. They're really relying on those top four now. Johnny Oduya looks to be playing injured, like many players are, as you mentioned earlier as well. Do you think this extra day off will help the Blackhawks on the back end there?
I think it should. Just as you mentioned, the amount of minutes they've been playing. But Duncan Keith, I don't think that guy gets tired. He's conditioning is at a whole other level. But you know, I think it'll help him in the rest. But I think a few guys have said when you're playing, you want to play every other day. And you know, I think like you said, a few guys are dealing with injuries, and when you are dealing with injuries, I felt it was you just want to play every other day because you use that off day to go for a little skate or do some therapy or have a bike ride just to keep loose, and then you know you want to keep going, and that extra day in between, it just seems like it's maybe a bit too much. But you know, I think it'll help them. The amount of minutes those guys have played in these playoffs, I think is phenomenal, and I think it's not a lot of fun if you're the other two guys. You're not going to play a lot of minutes, but to answer your question, I think the rest is good for them. But players, they like to play every other day, and you want to get it over with because you have an opportunity to win. And that extra day, you're just sitting around thinking about what you can do next game and how close you are to winning the Stanley Cup. So, you know, it's a rest for your body, but I don't think so much for your mind.
Chris, heading into Game 5 here, and I know that Steven Stamkos has been criticized a little bit because he's only had one assist in the first four games, which I think is ridiculous because I think he's played pretty good, actually, and he was excellent in the Rangers series, and he was, even though he struggled a little bit offensively earlier, he's been very good with 18 points there. But when you look at, with two games left here, left in Tampa Bay, and it down to essentially a best of three, is this really an opportunity for Steven Stamkos to really break out? Because I think you'd agree, we probably haven't seen the best of him offensively in this series.
Yeah, I think he's, just kind of to echo what you said, I think he's played great in these playoffs, and in that Rangers series, he brought a real edge to his game, and he was physical. He was laying out big hits and agitating guys. And, goal scorers, it's funny when you go a few games without scoring, everyone starts saying, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with him? Well, it's tough to score every game. And, I think last game he had a couple of really good opportunities and probably should have had a goal. Seabrook wouldn't have got a stick on the one, and he had the other chance late, even later in the game, and dying seconds and got a chance in front. So I think for a guy like him, he's a great young man. He works hard. He wants to win. He doesn't care if he scores or if someone else scores. He just wants to win. So, I think we're going to see some big things from him. I think he's going to put together a couple good games here. And, like I said, even that last series, the series went along and, at home and playing in front of the home crowd, he had some big games. So, he's one of those guys. He just needs a chance. He needs that one opportunity. He can bury it. So I think if he continues to play the way he has, he's going to get some chances. He's going to bury him.
Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. It was sort of unique, I believe it was before a couple days ago, that John Cooper didn't do his coach's press conference. He instead turned it over to Rick Bowness. We know Joel Quenneville's been into these Stanley Cup finals before. This is the first one for Cooper. He's had a lot of track record of success in the AHL and, of course, as in the regular season in the NHL. How important is that sort of veteran influence next to him in Rick Bowness, getting him ready for the last three games of what's been a very close series so far?
I think it's really important, and it's like having veteran players on your team, and it's these new experiences for a lot of these guys, the majority of these guys, John Cooper included. So I have a guy like Rick Bowness that has the experience he does, and it's just almost like having a shoulder or an ear to talk to, and he can say, listen, just calm down, or this is going to happen. And then I think it's great. I think it's you want that. You want guys you can rely on. And when Steve Yzerman assembled his coaching staff with Steve Thomas and George Gwozdecki and going down the line, they have a little bit of everything, and you got some ex-players and guys with experience to surround a guy like John Cooper, who's a great young coach, but this is still pretty new to him, and especially playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Stanley Cup finals. He's never done it before, so I think it's great to have a guy, veteran guy that can I don't know if talk you off the ledge is the proper way to say it, but just say, hey, all right, just relax, it's okay. And I think John Cooper's done a good job of handling the media. I've only seen him one time get a little testy, but as we know, there's a lot of coaches that get testy every single time they get up on that podium.
Some of your former coaches.
Former coach of mine. That was great. They had to tune in just for John Tortorella's press conferences. But I think when you do stuff like that and you switch it up and you have another coach do it, or even the stuff John Tortorella did, he was smart in what he did, because you're drawing attention away from the players or any other things that are going on, and people are talking about other things, like, what did John Tortorella do at that press conference? Or, wow, you had a different coach there. So, there's so many little different tactics and things within the game. So I think it's great. It's a lot of fun. And it's the first team to win the next two games is going to win the Stanley Cup.
It will be a lot of fun. Chris Dingman, Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst. Always appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, no problem. My pleasure, guys.
Take care, Chris. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday.
I'm excited. I'm excited at the opportunity. I was born in Detroit. I grew up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. I grew up a Red Wings fan, actually. So from a personal side of it, it's certainly an exciting day. But probably more importantly, from a professional side, for me, this was the job that, if it was available, that I wanted, mainly because of the people involved, the ownership with the Ilitches, Ken Holland as the general manager. We've got an unreal scouting staff here in Detroit. And then probably most importantly, the players. I've had an opportunity to coach most of the players, whether it was here in Detroit as an assistant or whether it was in Grand Rapids. And the one thing I can say for certain is I'm taking over a group that has great, great character. And I think when you take over teams, sometimes you're not sure. You're probably hoping to have great character. I don't have to hope. I know, and that's a good feeling for me.
That is new Detroit Red Wings head coach Jeff Blashill being interviewed upon his introduction to be the new head man in Detroit, replacing, of course, Mike Babcock.
Kind of sounded like Mike Babcock.
It sounded exactly like Mike. I've only read about Jeff Blashill. I read a lot about him, actually, before the show. I'm preparing for the show. And then you play that clip. Was that Mike Babcock talking?
I honestly thought midway through that was Mike Babcock. I obviously know it isn't.
Yeah, Corey, we're sure that was Jeff Blashill. Okay, Corey's giving us the double thumbs up.
Well, we know that Babcock was born in Saskatoon.
Yes, of course. So. But, yeah, no, they did sound very eerily similar. And, of course, the Detroit Red Wings would certainly hope and be quite pleased if they had eerily similar results when it comes to their head coaching duties. He's the new head man in Detroit. No suspense around this announcement. This was Blashill's job from the start once it became apparent that Babcock was going to move on.
Sorry, I still can't get over how similar that sounded to Mike Babcock. That was like when George Costanza listens to the tape about risk.
That's risk management.
And it sounds like George Costanza. That was unbelievable.
I hate my own voice. I don't want to listen to that.
No, you're right, Drew. I mean, we all knew that Jeff Blashill was going to be hired as the next head coach of the Detroit Red Wings if Mike Babcock wasn't coming back. He's done an excellent job in Grand Rapids with the Griffins, and we're seeing a similar path that John Cooper took, really, from the AHL to the NHL, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good hire. You know, as Richie mentioned, he's an unproven commodity as an NHL head coach because he hasn't coached in the NHL ever before. But you hear that, you know, he's an excellent X's and O's guy in the AHL. And, you know, I think that this Detroit Red Wings team, we've talked about it a lot, guys. This team almost beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, and the Tampa Bay Lightning might not end up winning the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, this Detroit Red Wings team, there's a lot of talent, and they've got some young guys coming through the system here. And I really think, and, you know, we know that the AHL is a feeder league and it's a developmental league, mm-hmm. and we're familiar with that because of the fact that the Moose were here before the Jets came back, and the Vancouver Canucks in that relationship. But I think this is kind of the new way, and I think we're going to see this more and more in the NHL, Richie. I think, you know, we've seen some new coaches come in, Dave Haxtell, John Hines in New Jersey. I think that's happening, and you have the success at the AHL level, especially within the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you want a guy that's got familiarity with these guys like Thomas Tatar and Gustav Nyquist and Luke Glendening, goes on and on and on, all these guys that have played for Blashill in the AHL. So, yeah, this was not a surprise. They were just waiting for the AHL playoffs to end to make this announcement.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, certainly a successful AHL head coach. He's successful in his stint in the USHL. He led the Indiana Ice to a USHL championship, led Western Michigan to a berth in the NCAA tournament. It seems like Blashill is just a guy who wins at every level, and I think it's going to, you mentioned his familiarity with the Red Wings roster, because he's coached a lot of these guys and developed a lot of these guys in the AHL, so there's really no reason to expect, you know, much of a hiccup in Detroit's legacy of success of making the playoffs at the very least.
Put aside his familiarity with the young players, he's still going to be able to rely on Datsyuk and Zetterberg. That's
helps,
the key,
matters.
Right?
Yeah.
Known as a player's coach, but not too lenient with the players. And you say, if he was asked about that, he got a little bit defensive. He says, if, you know, a player's coach and that I respect and I communicate with them, fine. But if you think I'm easy on them, I'm not. And I'm paraphrasing him there, of course, but I like the way Ken Holland handled this. You know, he went to Jeff Blashill last year and said, you know, you can interview for other jobs if you want, or we'll give you a raise to stick around here. I think with the implication that he'd be the next coach, and especially if Babcock was leaving, and that's exactly what happened. And Blashill told him he wanted to stick around. He stayed loyal to Holland, and Holland stayed loyal to him. didn't really explore the coaching market. I like that. Mm-hmm. He knew what he had. He developed the coach just like they developed the players.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. You know, they make sure everything's well cooked before they promote them, and
that's right.
No reason to, you know, this is, you know, the question, you know, does Dylan Larkin come up with him? You know, that's, well, you know, yet to see. But in any event, the Red Wings are still well positioned to continue on.
I mean, Timo Pulkkinen's a guy they brought up during the year, and he had a good playoffs. And, you know, he's a right-handed shooting guy. I don't know. I've never seen Larkin play. But the idea is, I mean, they have a lot of forwards. So, I mean, if Larkin needs to develop longer with Anthony Mantha and guys like that, although apparently he's further along in his progression, then that's fine. But that's the idea. They don't rush these guys. They never rush these guys. And so it certainly sounds like Babcock, as we said off the top. But he's going to come in, and Jeff Blash is going to come in, and he's got a good team. I mean, he's got a Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals right now, tied 2-2, and Detroit Red Wings, in my opinion, outplayed him in the series. So he's that's how close this yeah. league is.
If it wasn't for that incredible comeback by Tampa Bay in Game 4, Detroit should have been up 3-1 in that first round series. And, you know, had Detroit gotten back past Tampa, there's no reason to think that they couldn't have gone, yep. you know, far as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think Blashill's, you know, it seems, you know, there was no question about it in Ken Holland's mind. And generally speaking, if Ken Holland thinks it's good, I'm not about to quibble with the guy who's had the track record of success as a general manager that Kenny Holland has had.
Absolutely. And even though it's tough when a coach is first hired, well, first of all, the season hasn't even ended yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's going to be some hiccups, as there are going to be hiccups for John Hines. There's going to be hiccups for Dave Haxtell. But as you mentioned, Jeff Blashill, all he's done is win at every single level, and I think the familiarity with the organization makes it a lot more seamless. And I think if the Red Wings had this extended coaching search, Richie, after Mike Babcock, I don't think that's good for the organization at all. I think, you know, they knew if Mike Babcock wasn't coming back, Kenny Holland knew that Jeff Blashill was the first person to be offered the job. And I think that there's no reason to think that he won't be successful and the organization won't be successful. You know, you mentioned players like Dylan Larkin and Anthony Mantha, both later first-round picks. This organization just seems to always feed the NHL team from the AHL, mm-hmm. and they do it better than anybody. We've said that time and time again. Mm-hmm. So, I every year when I'm picking teams to make the playoffs, I actually can't not pick the Detroit Red Wings to make the playoffs. That's just what they do. Sure. The Detroit Red Wings make the playoffs every year.
Period.
Just pencil them in next year to make the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's in business. Good organizations have a succession plan. In hockey, it's the same thing. And that's all the Red Wings are doing, is they're implementing the succession plan that they had on paper, and they're hoping to receive the similar results. And like you said, it certainly makes it a lot easier when you got a guy like Pavel Datsyuk, who, you know, slowing down a little bit, but still a hell of a damn good player here. You know, at 36 years of age, and, you know, they got some problems on, you know, terms of contracts there. That Steven Weiss contract is an albatross.
Well, the word is they're either going to buy him. I mean, unless he's in the plans for Jeff Blashill, they're going to buy him out.
Right. And so you're going to see a bit of a youth movement in Detroit, but it's a youth movement where all these guys, they're not coming in, you know, completely fresh. They've, you know, spent a few years sort of, you know, getting their feet under them in the NHL system, and then they're going to be ready to take another step forward.
I'd be careful to call it a youth movement, because I do think the Red Wings will go out and they'll be players on the free agent market. I think this team, even though, you know, they are a younger team, Drew, than they have been in the past, mm-hmm. especially those teams that won the Stanley Cup with Chris Chelios and Jamie mm-hmm. McCowan and all those guys. But I do think that the Red Wings are. I mean, I know Richie's going to get mad here, but we know that they wanted Dion Phaneuf and they were interested in Mike Green. So I think that's what they're going after. They need another defenseman there. And I do think there'll be a player in the UFA market.
By the way, I know, this is probably just the bias related to the Detroit Red Wings. If they were to get Dion Phaneuf, you can certainly see a scenario where Dion Phaneuf goes to Detroit, where he's not the main guy. He can sort of just do his thing without having any pressure on him and sort of thriving, you know, in a Detroit Red Wings system. I mean, we've seen it happen so many times before. You get out of a bad situation and you just sort of become a better player because you don't have any of the distractions circling around you that you used to have. You know, the Red Wings, like you said, Ezzie, to your point, though, about going out and maybe being active in free agency or you know, in trade, they're going to have a lot of salary cap space. I mean, they got $13 million right now. And that's with the cap, you know, the cap going up.
You got to watch, Drew, for all the guys they have to sign in the upcoming years. So it's similar to the Jets. You have Lowry, Scheifele, Trouba coming up. The Wings are going to have Nyquist and all these other guys you're going to have to sign. Mm-hmm. And so you have to watch how much you lock in now. That extends later on.
Right. But, I mean, you got to go like Johan Franzen, who's on the books. It's, I mean, it's hard to see, you know, based on how, you know, if he's going to come back based on his concussion history. Obviously, you hope the best for him, but that'll be an interesting thing to see. The Red Wings are going to be an interesting team to watch over the next couple of years, and I think the Jeff Blashill hiring is just sort of a seamless transition to the next phase for the Detroit Red Wings organization. Let's head to break. When we come back, Brendan Savage of MLive.com is going to join us, talk a little bit more about Jeff Blashill.
The macho man.
I'm sorry?
The macho man, Brendan Savage.
Oh. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Detroit Red Wings for MLive.com, Brendan Savage. Brendan, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure.
Brendan obviously brought you on to talk about the Red Wings introducing Jeff Blashill as their new head coach earlier this week. It seems to us, at least from our perspective, that this is just the, you know, this is the succession plan that the Red Wings had in place, and there shouldn't be much of a hiccup, you know, at all in terms of, you know, moving from the Mike Babcock era that was so successful to the Jeff Blashill era.
No, he's kind of been the heir apparent here for at least a year. There were five teams looking for coaches last year that wanted to talk to him, and the Red Wings denied them, gave him a big raise, gave him a contract extension. So they think highly of him, so do other teams. And he's also ran a lot of the same systems in Grand Rapids. He's familiar with, I think, 15 of the players he's coached at one point or another. 10 that were on the playoff roster he had in Grand Rapids, and then I think there was another 5 that were on the team in 2011-12 when he was an assistant to Babcock. So he's pretty familiar with everything that they do, and he knows all the guys that are coming up in the system too, not only from Grand Rapids, but he also has run their development camp and coached their prospects tournament team the last 3 years. So, no, there should be no problems.
You know, Brendan, you mentioned that Jeff Blashill has been the heir apparent for quite some time, you know, a year or so. Going back to Mike Babcock, and you know, we've talked about it quite a bit on this show, and really it's been talked about across the hockey world because he's been the biggest free agent coach of all time. But how close do you think Mike Babcock was to staying in Detroit?
Oh, that's a tough question because that was something he never really would talk about. All season, he said that before the season started, that he wasn't going to discuss that. And, you know, I kind of thought he was gone after the first year after the start of the year because he, 10 years is a long time. You got to wonder, was his message getting a little stale? Were the players tuning him out? Some of the players anyway. Did he want a new challenge? I just think, all things considered, he thought maybe it was time to move on, and he knew he was going to get a big payday. I'm not sure anybody knew he was going to get the payday he got, mm-hmm. but you know, he knew he was going to be highly in demand, and that's a pretty good situation to be in.
Brendan, we played a clip of Jeff Blashill coming out into the last segment, and it sounded, I mean, if you were a hockey fan just tuning in for a second, you would have thought you were listening to Mike Babcock.
Everybody says that, you know, and I don't hear it quite as much, but, you know, I guess when you hear him in an interview situation, he sounds a lot like Babcock. They kind of have the same mannerisms. They use some of the same phrases. And so I guess it must be true. Everybody's saying it. But, you know, they're very close. They talked once a week during the season, and Babcock always spoke very, very highly of him. The one thing Babcock always said was that when he was looking for an assistant coach, the person's, you know, personality and what kind of character they have were just as important to him as the hockey side of it, and Blashill fits that bill.
So when we look at Blashill in terms of style, and we had Ken Holland on the show, I think it was about a year and a half ago, we talked about Mike Babcock. When he hired him from Anaheim, he said the biggest thing he needed to have Mike Babcock change was instead of playing you know, north, south all the time. He wanted the teams to play a little bit more east-west. And he said that Babcock, you know, grew into that. Is there something that Blashill is known for in terms of style and anything you think he might have to change in order to, you know, better equipped to deal with this Red Wings roster?
Well, I think that's going to be the question mark, is to see what exactly he brings to the team that might be different. To be honest with you, I haven't seen the Griffins play ever. I also cover the Pistons. I'm at the Palace right now waiting for an NBA draft workout, so I don't have much time to watch anything other than the Red Wings or the Pistons. So that's going to be the interesting thing, is to see what different things he brings to the team, what kind of things maybe he does as far as mixing up the pairings, maybe on defense, the forwards. You know, that's going to be the thing, I think, to really watch. But I just don't know what exactly he's going to do differently than Babcock.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Brendan Savage of MLive.com, discussing the hiring of Jeff Blashill as the new head coach of the Detroit Red Wings. Brendan, moving towards on the ice as opposed to from behind the bench, the Red Wings announced they're not going to bring back Eric Cole, who they acquired at the trade deadline. Then, of course, he got injured just before the playoffs started, which sort of put a crimp into the plans for the Red Wings. You know, how active this is a team? It's got some cap room, but as we were discussing last segment, it's also got some pretty good players they're going to have to re-sign the next couple of years. Do you expect them to be especially active in either the trade market or free agency as we approach July 1st?
Well, that's another thing that, you know, is going to be interesting to watch, because one of the things Blashill said when he was hired was that he was going to have to sit down with Holland here soon and discuss the whole personnel situation. I think Holland will be looking. He's always looking. Whether he does anything, I'm still not sure, even though the Red Wings aren't the Red Wings of 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I'm not sure a lot of teams still want to deal with them because they've had so much success over the years. So I think Holland will be looking. The other thing, too, I think, though, is they're pretty well set for the future. They might not be a contender right away, and I'm not sure, you know, they will be in 3 or 4 years, but they've got a lot of good prospects down in Grand Rapids, and they're going to have to make room for some of them or trade them, which could land them a player if they want to package somebody.
Do you think it's a defenseman, though, if Ken Holland has a wish list? And I imagine they do have that board there at Joe Louis Arena where they're talking about filling holes for next year. And you hear that, you know, they were pretty serious about getting Dion Phaneuf. I know Richie here didn't think that'd be a good fit with all the skill there in Detroit. Not to say that Phaneuf isn't skilled, but he's a little slower on the back end there. But do you think that that's probably what Kenny Holland is coveting the most, as a puck-moving defenseman?
I think so. I mean, I think he's looking for a defenseman, some kind of defenseman, somebody that'll move the puck, somebody that'll be good on the power play, maybe somebody that'll be physical. I wouldn't be surprised if Phaneuf is still somebody they might take a look at. I think they'll do whatever they think will help the team at any position, but I think defense, you never can really have too many good defensemen, can you?
That's true, certainly, especially the old Red Wings with Rafalski, Lidstrom, and that crew. Yeah. Speaking of old Red Wings, Chris Chelios, Brendan, is he going to be assistant coach here?
I'm not sure how much legs that whole thing has.
Or, Brendan, is Chelios going to play for the Red Wings next year?
Yeah, exactly. I he might be a little interested right now, but I question whether he wants to do the day-to-day stuff every single day and go on all the road trips. I could see him maybe being a special assistant or something where he comes in from time to time, because he did go to Grand Rapids a lot and go to practice there with Blashill. He was also one of Blashill's assistants at the prospect camp the last couple of years. But I would be surprised if that happens, to be honest with you.
And Brendan, there's been a few interviews, and Todd Nelson, a couple of other guys have been interviewed for the spot in Grand Rapids. Any word on who might take the helm there?
No, I haven't heard a whole lot about Grand Rapids, to be honest. I saw the things about Nelson, and I used to cover the minors, and I covered Nelson in the minor league. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, a good player, and obviously he's got a little bit of a coaching resume, so I don't know what they're going to do there. That's we actually... MLive has a paper in Grand Rapids, so we let Pete Wallner, our Griffins guy over there, take care of that stuff.
Yeah, just a final question here. Although you guys have mentioned on MLive, you had written up that Hockey's Future, I would screw that up, named Dylan Larkin the top prospect in the league. But final question in terms of the arena, the new arena, how's that progressing right now?
Slowly, very slowly, very, very slowly. You know, they supposedly broke ground last September, but I think that amounted to sticking a shovel in the ground and pulling out some dirt and taking some pictures. You know, we have stories, it seems like, every couple of days, but it's going pretty slow. I'm starting to wonder if they're going to make it by, I think it's 2017-18 they're supposed to open for, but they really need it. Joe Louis has seen much, much better days.
Brandon, we'll let you get onto the Pistons beat today. We appreciate you squeezing us in this morning and enjoy, I guess, the NBA prospects that are going to be coming in. Who are the Pistons are looking they're looking at Devin Booker. Is that what I understand?
It's tough to tell. They made a trade the other day with Milwaukee for Ersan Ilyasova, yeah. So I think that's going to fill one of their needs for a stretch four forward. And then they've got Sam Decker from Wisconsin in here. He was actually just standing across the parking lot from me on his phone. So I think maybe they're going to go after a shooting guard, or a shooting forward, a small forward, I'm sorry. Which one, I'm not sure yet. That's something I have to study up on here in the next couple of weeks, but they've got four guys in today.
Well, I have a bias in favor of the University of Kentucky players, so they'd be fine taking any of the guys that are kicking around from UK.
Those guys certainly have good pedigrees. You could do a lot worse than getting a guy from Kentucky.
I would agree with you there, Brendan. Appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Brendan. Let's head to break.
Sorry, hold on, Drew. What do you think of the Arne Tellem hire?
That's Arne Tellem in Detroit is moving from... wasn't he already...
He's an agent.
I know he was an agent, but I thought he was already in the organization there.
No, I think he was just advising people. Now he's part of the.
Now he's formally
now.
Part of the.
What
yeah.
do you think, Drew?
I don't really know much about it. Was Arne Tellem Jordan's agent?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, there you go.
If you want to have a basketball segment, I mean, I'll talk NBA Finals if you want. But if you want to talk Mozgov,
yeah, you like to tweet about Mozgov a lot. I noticed as
he's my boy. I mean, the NBA Finals have been great.
Yeah,
and you know the Pistons. I was a big fan of the Pistons when they had Joe Dumars, Dennis Rodman, back in the day. Isaiah
back
Thomas,
when Drew was like 64.
Bill Laimbeer. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had some great teams.
Oh, the bad boy Pistons of the 80s were a tremendous team. And then, of course, they had the run to the final. Didn't they? No, they won.
They won. They beat the Lakers. Back.
Yeah,
bro.
Ben Wallace. When Ben Wallace was
Big
dominant.
Ben. Yep.
Beat the Lakers inside. With Karl Malone and Gary Payton on that team.
That was right. That was the old Lakers team where they where Kobe, yeah, they lost.
They stopped talking to each other in the middle of the finals, I think.
Yeah, well, that was Karl Malone made the inappropriate comment to Kobe's wife.
You know, just quickly before we go to break here, I mean, you know, Brendan Savage, you know, great interview, by the way, coming on and talking about, you know, the new arena. I know Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com has seen a game at Joe Louis Arena.
That's
but
your,
for me,
your one mention per show of Dave Manuk?
Yeah. And for me.
How much do you get paid for that mention?
You know, we were all at NASA.
Three donuts?
We were all at NASA Coliseum in Long Island. To me, I'm going to make sure that I see a game there because. Even though, you know, that it's not the nicest
arena.
When I saw
this, they closed it.
No, he meant Joe Louis Arena. You got to check it out if you can. There's a couple more years left of that arena because, I mean, there's so much history there, right?
Well, speaking of the New York Islanders, we're going to head out to Charlottetown, talk to the general manager of the QMJHL Charlottetown Islanders.
It's a good segue, Drew.
Thank you. Grant Sonia is going to join us next to talk about the QMJHL NHL draft prospects. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One hour down, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the general manager of the QMJHL Charlottetown Islanders. He joins us to talk about the QMJHL's draft-eligible prospects. Grant Sonia, welcome back to the program, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Drew, Richard, Ezra. Thanks for having me.
How are you, Grant?
Doing great, bud.
That's good. Grant, obviously brought you on to talk about the NHL draft. It's coming up in 2 weeks, less a day, will be the first round in Sunrise, Florida. Wanted to bring you on to talk about the QMJHL's draft-eligible prospects. Want to start with a player who was who you're very familiar with. That's Charlottetown Islanders forward Daniel Sprong, who was ranked higher on the draft boards earlier in the season, but has since fallen a little bit. He was down to 38th on Craig Button's final list, making him sort of a second round selection. What can you tell us about Daniel Sprong's game, and do you think how would you describe his play throughout the course of the year for your Charlottetown Islanders?
Well, Daniel's been a wonderful player for us in terms of the offensive output. Led our team in scoring as an underage when he broke into the league last year. Led our team in scoring again this year with 88 points. He's a dynamic offensive player. No easier way to say it other than he's got some deficiencies in his game on the defensive side of things. But, he's a little bit like the Rocky Mountain Range. There's lots of peaks, but there's also some valleys. And, he's a guy that he's a world-class talent. His skill, his shot, his ability to read the play, see the ice, all elite. You've got to learn how to play the game better, and I'm sure a National Hockey League coaching staff and development staff will be able to improve that, and we'll continue to work on improving that as well as an organization.
Yeah, Grant, you've been in an NHL front office for the draft. So on that point about Sprong, how much do the teams, I know it's obviously case-by-case basis, but how often do teams, they say in a pre-draft analysis, this player defensively isn't particularly good, but we're confident we can develop that part of the game as opposed to the skill part of the game, which is harder to develop?
Well, I think for me, the number one thing is if the player lacks in character, then you're going to have issues because the game is played at such an intense rate now, and we're watching the Stanley Cup Finals, two wonderful skating, talented teams. But the commitment level in terms of the intensity and the willingness to make plays and take a hit, those things are all on the forefront now. So Daniel's character is high. He's a misread kid often. I think for me, that's the key, is if they have high character, I think they can overcome some deficiencies that they have. Very, very, very often, or very, very seldom rather, does a perfect player come along. Mm-hmm. This year's draft might have two of them. Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. They're as perfect can be without playing a game in the NHL. And then mostly players have issues in terms of one side of the game or the other. Daniel, without a doubt, in all my years of experience, he's one of the elite offensive players I've ever seen. But he has issues, and I'm sure staff can work on that. And he'll grow as an individual as time goes on.
In Halifax, Grant, Timo Meier, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, 90 points in 61 games, and you read a little bit about his game, and they say he's a bit of a Swiss Army knife, can play different roles. What are the strengths and weaknesses of his game?
Not many weaknesses, to be honest with you. This is, for me, this is one of the elite players in our league for the draft. We have a really good crop of players that are going to be drafted out of the queue. But Timo Meier, for me, is he gives me the impression he's NHL ready. That's a bold statement, but he's big, he's strong, he's really physical, very willing to take part in the heavy side of the game, and he's got elite skill. A lot of people are giving Nick Ehlers the credit because he's playing with Timo Meier, but I can remember back when I broke into the National Hockey League in management, there was these two players, one named Vincent LeCavalier, the other named Brad Richards, and they said Brad Richards wouldn't do anything without Vinny. Well, he went on to do more. And Timo Meier, for me, is not relying on Nick Ehlers, who is a wonderful player in his own right and would be a lot of fun to play with. But Timo Meier is a really, really good hockey player. Proved it at the World Juniors, proved it every night with the Halifax Mooseheads, and I think he's an exceptional draft pick.
Yeah, Grant, and Timo Meier, he was the highest-ranked player out of the QMJHL on Craig Button's list, and then on Bob McKenzie's list, the highest-ranked player was St. John's Sea Dogs defenseman Jacobs Borrell. And I don't know a lot about him. What can you tell us about his game?
He's a wonderful, easy player. The game right now for Jacob Borrell, comes, he gives the impression it comes very easy skater, posturally very correct, has a great shot, great handling of the puck, makes the first pass, has an exceptional shot, slides the blue line, snaps the puck, gets it to the net. The knock on Zboril is that he's a little bit unengaged in the game. I think the upside on him is tremendous. I think he's one of those cerebral players that's constantly thinking about the game. Maybe loses his intensity from time to time, but they're in our division. We played them 9 times last year, and I think this kid's an exceptional defensive prospect who's got a little bit of everything, and I think you're going to be hearing his name for a long time to come.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Grant Saunier. Grant is the general manager of the QMJHL Charlotte Islanders. We're talking about the draft-eligible prospects from the QMJHL ahead of the NHL draft coming up in a little less than 2 weeks' time. Grant, obviously here in Winnipeg, where the Jets fans are sort of obsessed over who are the Jets going to take with their 2 first-round picks. One of the picks is at number 17, and that puts them right possibly in the target of Evgeny Svechnikov of the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles. He had 78 points in 55 games this year. What can you tell us about Svechnikov's game, and how do you think he projects into the NHL?
Well, he's a big, talented kid. I think the thing that impressed me the most about him was when the games got tougher and there was a little bit more physical play, sometimes the European players, and I don't know if that's a fair analogy, sometimes players in general will disappear a little bit. This guy rose to the occasion. Watched them a lot in the Quebec series in the first round. They took a very good Quebec Rampart team to 7 games, and night in, night out was one of the best players on the ice. He makes a really good in-tight pass in full speed. I call it the pro pass. When you're skating through the neutral zone and there's coverage there, he has the ability to find people 5-10-foot passes while there's coverage. Has great vision, uses his stick very well. I like the player a lot. Again, I mentioned I think the Q has a great crop of players, and he's certainly one of them that's going to get drafted and be a really good pro.
Grant, you mentioned that the Q has some really good players. You look at the OHL, they might have, 5 guys go in the top 10. Do you look at it, league to league and say the Q, we need to get to where the OHL is in terms of that kind of a top 10 crop, or do you just think it's cyclical and it just comes and goes?
Yeah, I mean, when I was doing the job and either in management or as a head scout or just even a regional scout and did crossovers, it's easier for me to handicap the leagues, but I really can't speak to the OHL and to the Western Hockey League. I know there's always that competition, if you will, where one league's better than the other. Last year, the Q was light in terms of the high-end draft picks and the quality and quantity. This year, there's just a lot of good players. I can't put my finger on it as to why that is, but we have a good crop of a really good crop of 97 born players in our league, and I think there's a potential for probably anywhere from 10 to 12 of them going the first 2 rounds. So it makes it interesting. The coverage in our league this year was phenomenal. Our team alone, anytime we played St. John, we had five guys ranked on Central's list, and St. John had 8 guys ranked. When we played one another, there was 50, 60 NHL personnel in the building. So good for our franchise, good for our league, and good for the players.
Grant, we want to ask you about a few other players here, and I believe you have 5 players on the Charlottetown Islanders that could be drafted. Is that correct, or are projected to be drafted this year? And another one of those guys is Philip, I think I'm going to get the name right here, Schlopik. I know you guys took him in the import draft. He's ranked 24th by Bob McKenzie, 46th by Craig Button. I know those guys have some differences on their rankings there, but what can you tell us about his attributes as a player, and where do you see him going on draft day?
Well, it'll be interesting to see where he goes, because he's fluctuated up and down on people's lists. I've never, ever budged on my opinion of this player. I think he's a wonderful, first of all, a wonderful person. Great. He came in here, could hardly speak English at all. By the end of the year, he's doing interviews and he's telling jokes. He's a really smart, intellectual kid that really reads the game exceptionally well. He reminds me of a bigger version of David Krejci. And David Krejci, when he played in Gatineau in the Quebec League, the knock on him was his skating. Phillip's skating, from a quickness, explosiveness standpoint, needs to improve. His top-end skating is fine, but the game of hockey, there's very seldom other 200-foot races. So quickness is really important, something we'll continue to work on with him while he plays for us. And I know it's an issue with some NHL teams, but the reading of the game, the distributing of the puck, and his offensive prowess is really, really high, and I think he's going to be a wonderful pro.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sorry, Grant, go ahead. Our guest is Grant Saunier, general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders, here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Grant, we already spoke about Jakub Zboril, the defenseman for St. John. There's another very highly ranked defenseman on St. John. That's Thomas Chabot, ranked 19th by Craig Button, 6'1", 181. What can you just, a lot of comparisons maybe have been made to Alex Pietrangelo. How would you see Chabot's game, and is there a player that he reminds you of?
Well, I remember Pietrangelo a lot. He was obviously a very high pick, and I see the players differently than that. I can understand the comparison because they're both tall, they're lanky, they skate really well. Chabot, for me, is a transporter of the puck. That was a scout, a good scouting friend of mine described him that way, and I thought it was a great description. His ability to go back and retrieve pucks and skate the puck out of trouble is elite. He's a great transporter of the puck. But as he gets to the red line and closer to the offensive blue line, I find that his vision narrows a little bit, and I don't see him as a high offensive player. On the power play, contrary to that, on the power play, slides the line really well, makes a good pass, sees the ice. I think he'll pick up his points assist-wise. But off the rush, I don't see him like Pietrangelo. I don't see him as that elite offensive player. But this guy is a big time prospect. His skating ability, as he gets bigger and stronger, he's going to be a really competitive puck moving defenseman.
Grant, by the way, I know hockey fans listening to the show are loving all of this analysis. Mm-hmm. It's getting them ready for the upcoming draft in Florida. We've got one more player to ask you about, and we can't ask you about all your players and all the QMJHL prospects, but another guy that I was kind of interested in that played for your Charlottetown Islanders this year was Cameron Kelly, and he was your alternate captain. He had a good season this year, posted 49 points, and he's kind of been described as a great shutdown forward, guy that can kind of mix it up and drop the gloves and everything like that. How did you see his game evolve this year, and how does he project as a pro player?
Well, he's an interesting player. By the way, if you want, you can have me on more often. That's one way you can ask me about more players.
We'd love to, Grant.
Yeah, I'm always available. But Cameron Kiley, back to him, he's... He really is a great two-way player. I think the thing that scouts really, what caught their eye was his ability to read the play. He's smart. He's always on the defensive side. We traded for him. It was the first move I made when I took this job. He's a Charlottetown native. Was drafted in the first round by Gatineau. Had some struggles there in terms of the French English and the schooling. Both parents are teachers. And we were able to acquire him. So his game has really evolved. He had 6 points in his first year in the league. He's a late 96 born. Last year he had somewhere around 30 points, close to 60 points for us this year. And everything for me with him is strength related. A really skinny, weak kid when he came into the league. He's worked really hard to develop his body. His dad's actually a big, strong, powerful man. We hope that he can get to be that size. But as he gets stronger, it allows the thinking side of the game and his competitiveness to really start to win battles. And that's where he's really good. He's good on the wall. He's good in open ice in terms of being on the right side, picking pucks off. And he's proving that he can put up some offensive numbers. So we're really happy to have him. He's going to be a really key piece for us if our team is going to move in the direction we think it is. We think we're going to be a really good team next year and the year after. We'd like to think that we could push for something big, and Cam Kiley's a big part of it.
Final question for you, Grant. You're about 2 years settled on the job now. How are you enjoying being the GM and PE in Charlottetown?
Oh, it's great. I'm a PEI native. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a dream job for me. My wife and daughter, my daughter's young, and I'm able to allow her to grow up in a in a great area, and it's good to be home. You know, before the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg, I'd moved home. Don Waddell, Rick Dudley, they allowed me to move back to PEI. As you know, I didn't get advanced on with the Jet crew, but it opened the opportunity for me to stay and in the game and take this job, and it's really been great. I've got great support staff, a great ownership group that have given me the resources to hire the right people and to move in the right direction, and there's a lot of buzz and excitement about our franchise in PEI.
And Grant, we'll have to make sure that we do have you on more often. If it was up to me, we'd have you on, but you know, Drew's
a tyrant.
Drew calls all the shots, and he doesn't let me book the guests. So,
Grant, do you believe that for a second?
I'm not sure, but as I was sitting waiting to go on the show, it dawned on me what the name of the show, The Illegal Curve. Have you ever had Marty McSorley on?
We haven't had McSorley on himself, but we've spoken to McSorley about the name.
Yeah.
He gave us the real background on what happened there.
Well, Marty's a really good friend of mine, and of course back in 93 when the Kings went on to play the Canadiens in the Stanley Cup Finals, he was called for an illegal curve.
Yep, of course.
And and it changed the outcome in some people's minds. And if Marty's listening, Marty, I'm sorry to bring it up. You're a good friend of mine. I don't want you to punch me in the head. But listen, I'm always, it's a pleasure and honor for me to be on with you. I think you guys are great. Do a great job on handicapping the draft. I'll be in Florida to support our four kids that are sure to get drafted, and if you ever need anything, I'm always here for you.
Well, we'll be down in Miami as well. We'll be at the draft and Sunrise broadcasting.
Well, Drew,
there.
You won't. I
won't be. Ezra,
you know, Drew's talking. Yeah. Grant, Drew's talking like he's going to be there. Dave and I are going to be down there in Sunrise, so I'll make sure that you know we go for a nice drink on the beach.
Yeah, we had you on last year when we were in Philly, so we'll have you on. We'll definitely make arrangements to have you on in Sunrise as well.
Sounds good. Drew, don't take all that crap from these guys. I know you're the boss.
Grant, I've been taking crap from these guys for about 20 years now, so this is nothing at this point in time. The only difference is they're not swearing at me on air. Normally, if we were off air, the language would be a little saltier.
Well, it's a family show, so we'll leave it at that. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Grant.
Grant, appreciate the time as always. Thanks very much. Grant Sonye, the general manager of the QMJHL's Charlottetown Islanders. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Ron Hainsey and Andre Sekera man the points. This is Sekera. He'll walk the line away from Kopitar. Turning his Skinner. His shot stopped. Quick the rebound. They score! Eric Staal picks up the loose change, and the Hurricanes have tied it.
Watch Eric Staal. Let's just roll this thing. He gets help. White hash marks, of course, in the league this year. Jiří Tolustyj gets the possession, and Eric Staal, after he gets the help from Tolustyj, winning the draw, goes to the net. That's all about his reach. That's his reach to be able to beat quick before that pad could find the post.
And that is his 700th career point. Eric Staal with a huge power play goal.
Eric Staal of the Carolina Hurricanes scoring a goal there in that clip. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. A lot of chatter this week about the future of Eric Staal as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. He's going to become an unrestricted free agent after this season, currently making $8.25 million in terms of a salary cap hit. His salary is actually $9.5 million in actual cash that's going to be outlaid this year to Eric Staal. So for a cash-strapped team, not a big market team like the Carolina Hurricanes, a team not really going anywhere this season, a lot of talk that the Hurricanes might be in the market to trade away Eric Staal before the season begins.
Well, it's not just this season, Drew. It's a matter of, are they going to be contending in the next 5 years or so, and if not, what do you need him around for?
Sure.
And does parting with Eric Staal mean parting with Jordan Staal and Jeff Skinner, who's got 3 years left?
And the reason that all those sort of tie into each other is they're all represented by the same agent. Same with Cam Ward. So the sort of four known players on the Carolina Hurricanes are all represented by Rick Curran.
Ward and Eric Staal, 1 year left on their respective deals, both overpaid. Still good players, I think. Overpaid, though. And then Jordan Staal on the long-term deal. But is Jordan Staal's future tied to Eric Staal? And then Jeff Skinner with the 3 years. But he's got the concussion problems. So, I mean, that's something you have to take into account. Eric Staal is, good player.
He's a great player.
He can play. Is he a great player or is he a really good player?
I think he's a great player.
He's a really good player.
I think he's been, well, he's got a Stanley Cup.
Yep.
He's been an Olympian for Canada.
For sure.
To me, Eric Staal has been on really bad teams. Like, who's he playing with?
I think he plays with offensive skill. I don't know if he plays with the pack moving defenseman that you need to be able to transition the game, and you're always
behind. Carolina has been horrible for years, Rich. This team has been rebuilding here, and they've made some good draft picks. But to me, you know, I know Pierre LeBrun came out with a report, and you know, he's Eric Staal and his agent Rick Curran are going to meet with Ron Francis. To me, like, is that just a regular meeting? Like, what is that supposed to mean?
Well,
would they announce this is? I don't think that there's anything imminent, and I don't know if they would meet. To me, if you're moving on without Eric Staal, then you're just throwing the rebuilding process back even more, because then who's leading your team, right?
But do you need him? You might as well trade him. Trade him at the draft.
But he's your best player, and if you're going to trade, and I don't think, by the way, that that all these guys are going to be traded as a group. I mean,
no.
I think that, you know, Eric Staal and Jordan Staal, it's obvious that they probably want to play together, and I think they would try to accommodate that, but I don't know necessarily if all four of those guys are you're talking about their three best players there, right, with Jeff Skinner.
But if you keep them around for this upcoming season, you know, what are you going to finish, 26th in the league? Maybe 24th?
Well, that's the point. I mean, Jordan Staal and Jeff Skinner are younger than Eric Staal and Ward and Cam Ward. And so if you trade Eric Staal and Cam Ward, both pending UFAs after next season, as you get something. I mean, I don't think you get anything back for Cam Ward, because Cam Talbot's available and a bunch of other – Robin Leonard's available. All these guys are available via trade with cap hits way less than Cam Ward. Cam Ward just want to get rid of the contract.
Sure.
In terms of Eric Staal, you'll get something for a player like that. Obviously, as he thinks he's a great player, I think he's a really good player. We both agree the guy's talented and adds value to a team. He can skate, can play the wing, and can play center. When he's engaged, he's really good. I just don't think he's always engaged. I don't think he like sits around to take nights.
Isn't he married?
I don't think he takes nights off. I just think that he just... you have to get him motivated. I don't think he's all. He doesn't seem. Remember the game in Winnipeg when it was the Jordan's better chant? He really played a different game than I've seen him play usually.
You can understand why a guy playing for the Carolina Hurricanes is sort of hasn't been engaged night in, night out for the last couple of years. I mean, it's a team that's not going anywhere.
True. I don't know.
Even if he was dominant, they're not going to be a playoff team.
I think Montreal might want him, a bigger center, a guy who can move with that team, who can skate with that team. He'd add some size. I mean, there's certainly teams that would be interested, but I think there's no question he's traded and traded very shortly.
He was over a point a game in the lockout year. So, I mean, it's relatively recently that he's been able to put up good numbers still.
Yeah, he can. I mean, he's going to play top unit power play. He's going to play number one center, or if you have a good center, he's number one wing, left wing.
I mean, Eric Staal, I think at this point in his career, maybe he's, you know, he's not the Eric Staal maybe that got 100 points in his second year, and he's not the Eric Staal, that can necessarily, I don't want to say that can't lead a team, but maybe can't do it all himself, and I think... You know, he struggled with the supporting cast there. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the supporting cast hasn't been good there.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you talk about if Eric Staal went to a team that already has a lot of offensive talent. I mean, and I think Richie's right. I think especially with the free agent market the way it is, Drew, I think teams would be willing up to give up the draft picks and a prospect to get Eric Staal. I know whether or not you want to call him very good or very great. I mean, this is still a guy that's got, 6 30 goal years. He's put up regular 70 to 80 points. You know, you mentioned he was a point a game. This year was a bad year. I think he was around 54
points.
So, I mean, this is still a guy that's a first line forward in the NHL.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Craig Button's going to join us to talk about the NHL draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.